Sunday in between Christmas and New Year's. And in Texas, if you really want to hamper attendance, you make it overcast, cold, and damp. So I echo what Tom said this morning. I really appreciate you all braving the elements and coming out this morning. Take your Bibles or your smart device and open them with me this morning to Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. Our Christmas concert introduced our Christmas sermon series with a series titled Jesus, God's Own Son. And we've kind of followed that theme here for the last few weeks. This morning, I want to kind of step back from the Nativity and take a bird's eye view of the coming of Jesus and kind of see that from a different perspective. The title of this final study is going to be Jesus, God's Own Son, Our All. And I mean our all. We're going to see that today as we look at our passage. On Christmas, Jesus brought with him all that our souls long for. He brought with him everything that our souls long for. And that was announced many, many years before he arrived. In fact, 700 years before the prophet Isaiah, before Christ was born, the prophet Isaiah had this to say in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6, "For a child will be born for us, a son will be given to us, and the government will be on his shoulders. He will be named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace." Those have been referred to as Jesus' throne name. That term, throne names, is a pretty common term. Throne names were the names given to ancient kings and ancient pharaohs before they assumed office. Throne names were given to individuals because they said something about the person. They said something important about their character, about their essence. And that's what we see here in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 6. NYU professor Adam Alter has made an interesting observation. He's observed the power of names seem to have in shaping destiny of individuals. The technical term is nominative determinism, which literally means name-driven outcome. Professor Alter points to some pretty convincing examples, like the current Lord Chief Justice of England and Wales is named Justice Igor Judge. That's actually his name. His colleague, whose name is Lord Justice Laws, is a judge in the Court of Appeals. Then there's the author of the book about the Arctic and the Antarctica named Daniel Snowman. A notorious Jamaican drug dealer named Christopher Coke. The rapper who was sentenced to 7 years in prison for grand larceny named Blake Robb. In the realm of sports, one very successful professional Israeli tennis player is named Anna Smashnova. The 7-time world champion surfer has the name Lane Beachley. Look at this. Derek Kickett was a great Australian soccer player. An Olympic boat rower from Great Britain is named, believe this, Stephen Rowbotham, and Usain Bolt is the name of the man who currently reigns as the fastest man in the world in the 100-meter and 200-meter races. These are actually their names. I even like the name of Professor Alter's book. It's, "Would Usain Bolt Run More Slowly with the Name Usain Plod?" Well, it looks as though in some cases names have influenced the lives, the occupations, even the effectiveness of individuals. That's not the case with Jesus. Jesus' names had nothing to do with who he would become. In fact, Jesus initiated those names. Jesus was alive and having influence 700 years before he was born. He's the one who influenced those names and brought those names about, those throne names. We long for direction as individuals. We long for strength. We long for unconditional love. We long for peace. Jesus fills those longings. Isaiah is telling us here, He is the Wonderful Counselor. He is the Mighty God. He is the Everlasting Father, and He is the Prince of Peace. And those are the things we long for in life. And Isaiah, 700 years before Christ was to be introduced to us, is saying, there is a Messiah coming who's going to fulfill all those longings of your heart. There is a Messiah coming who's going to meet all of your deepest and all of your most profound needs. Now, these things are hidden in these names, so let's look at the names and see if we can kind of glean these characteristics of Jesus. The first name, Jesus is the Wonderful Counselor. Beginning in verse 2, we find Isaiah talking about his people living in darkness. That's chapter 9, verse 2. Evidently, part of the darkness his people experienced resulted from the poor counsel they received at the royal court. Mediums and spiritualists were employed back there to provide advice and guidance to those who sought counsel. Their advice and guidance left people confused, left them defeated, left them discouraged, left them wandering. I think it's still pretty much that way today. The best advice we get from mankind, oftentimes not very good. Leaves us wondering, leaves us discouraged, leaves us defeated. But Isaiah looked into the future as one of God's prophets, and he saw a better day coming, a day when Jesus would counsel his people. Isaiah said this was going to be a wonderful counselor. That's his term. Jesus' counsel was not going to be like that of the world. His counsel would lead people out of darkness into light. And here we are, 2,018 years later, and we're here to confirm that. We're here to say, in fact, Isaiah was right in this name given to Jesus. What makes Jesus a wonderful counselor? Let's take some time with that question. First of all, what makes him a wonderful counselor is he loves us. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7. Cast all your care on him because he cares for you. I don't think there's a more important quality for a counselor to have than to genuinely care for the one being counseled. I know you've experienced this in your life. I've experienced it in mine. When I was in high school, you're going to find this hard to believe. We're not going to spend a lot of time with this, but I was hard to handle. I was a handful. I wasn't mean. I wasn't bad, but I had a healthy mischievousness about me. And because of that, I got in trouble more than normal. I'll leave it at that. The high school faculty counselor assigned to me was Miss Pritchard, and I just love her. And I'll tell you why I love her is because during those times when I would get in trouble for being mischievous, and I was sent to my faculty counselor, I always looked forward to seeing her because, you know what? She liked me. She liked me. I'd walk into her office or into her room, and she'd smile, and she'd start shaking her head like, oh, Steve, what have you done? What have you done now? And we would sit down. I didn't have a mother. Those of you who know me will know that. And we would sit down knee to knee, and we would talk. And I could just see in her eyes and I could hear in her voice, she was giving me the best counsel she could offer me because she liked me. She genuinely liked me. And that made all the difference in the world. That's why it's very important that we understand that Jesus likes us. Jesus likes you. You say, you know, I'm not the best in God's kingdom. Okay, we can all raise our hand on that one. But listen, in the midst of that, Jesus is a wonderful counselor for you because he loves you. He loves you. He genuinely likes you. What a great, great quality. Here's another thing that makes Jesus a wonderful counselor. He listens to us. Psalm 5, verses 1 and 2. Listen, David says, to my words. God, listen to my words, Lord. Consider my saying. Pay attention to the sound of my cry, my King and my God, for I pray to you. You ever been in the middle of talking to someone and notice they're not paying attention to you? You ever do that? I do. What effect does it have on you when you're in the middle of talking to someone you recognize they're really not paying attention to you? Does that affect you? Years ago, when I first came in the ministry, I was at a conference, and I was talking to another pastor, and this was when I was very young, and I'm known somewhat now. Back then, I wasn't known at all. And I was visiting with another pastor, and I could tell as I was talking with him, he would look over my shoulder this way, he would look over my shoulder that way, he'd look off over here, he'd look off over there, and I knew what he was doing. He was looking to see if there was someone more important to talk to. He was looking to see if there was someone more influential that he'd rather go over and spend time with. He would only listen to me as long as I was the most important person in his sphere of influence. But if he spotted someone else, he was going. That's not the way God is. When you're spending time with God, when you're in prayer with God, God is giving you his undivided attention. There is no one he would rather be visiting with in that moment than visiting with you. Do you know that about God? Do you understand that about God? God listens to you. You're the most important person in his sphere. That's one of the things that makes Jesus such a wonderful counselor. Here's the third thing. We're talking about why Jesus is a wonderful counselor. It's because he leads us. You know, Jesus doesn't say he's the good cowboy. He says he's the good shepherd. Cowboys get behind the herd and drive them. They force them. They push them where they want them to go. Cattle don't need to like the cowboy. They don't need to respect the cowboy. All they have to do is obey the cowboy. That's why they call it a cattle drive. The cowboy drives the cattle where he wants them to go. Jesus doesn't identify himself as the good cowboy. He identifies himself as the good shepherd. Right? The good shepherd. The shepherd's out in front of the flock. The sheep follow the shepherd because they trust him, because he's proven himself, because they know he's looking out for their well-being. Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd. I will always lead you in the way you should go. I'll always lead you beside the still waters. I'll always lead you to the cool green grass. I'll always lead you in according with your best interest. Isn't that what Jesus says in John chapter 10, verses 3 and 4? The good shepherd calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought all his own outside, he goes ahead of them. The sheep follow him because they recognize his voice. So as the wonderful counselor, Jesus loves you, Jesus listens to you, and Jesus is going to always lead you in the right way. What a wonderful counselor. Now, here's the second name. Here's the second name. Jesus is the mighty God. What exactly does it take to be mighty? What exactly does it take to be powerful? You know, before we built this facility, when we were worshiping over here in the multipurpose building, people always were using the drop-off there. We still do sometimes, but they were always using the drop-off. And this has been several years ago. And there was a young man in church who had a lot of questions to ask me, and it was a Sunday night. We were having services Sunday night in those days. So we stood out here. It was in the middle of summer. We stood out here under this drop-off and visited. And we visited for a long time. He has a little boy with him. By the way, these people have long since moved. But he has a little boy with him, about a two-year-old boy. And so as we were standing there visiting, we were, that summer, and you may recall this, we were infested with crickets. Do you remember the summer we were just overwhelmed with crickets? So as we were standing there talking, this little boy was going around stomping crickets. Crunch, 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 crunch. In fact, we talked so long and he was crunching crickets so long, I was afraid by the time we finished our conversation, we might need to add crickets to the endangered species list. He killed that many crickets while we were standing there talking. Enough so that when they finally left, I looked down and it was noticeable how many crickets there were on the ground. Now, I want to tell you how much power it took to smash one of those crickets. It took a foot about that long. That's about how much power it took to smash one of those crickets. But I want to talk to you about real power. You know what real power is? Real power is the power that can put that cricket back together. all the scientists in the world, all the teachers in the world, all the professors in the world, all the nuclear scientists in the world cannot build one replacement cricket. Not even one replacement cricket. And they can't repair that. They can't put that one back together again either. That's power. We're talking about power. It's not power to destroy or to tear down. God has the power to build up and give new birth. That's real power. That's real power. Only God has real power. Back in 1717, there was a King Louis XIV in France. He died. He preferred to be called Louis the Great, and he made people call him Louis the Great while he was alive. He was the monarch who declared, "I am the state." His court was the most magnificent in Europe. His funeral was the most spectacular ever seen up to that time. When he died, he left instructions that the sanctuary was to be unlit, no candles, except the ambient light coming in from the windows from the fading sun. There was only to be one large candle. It was to be mounted behind his casket. His casket was to be made out of solid gold. He was to be in the finest robe, and there was this one large candle behind him. Presiding over the funeral was a man named Bishop Massillon. He stood to speak at a pulpit higher than the candle. So as he stood to speak, he motioned, and his workers began carrying other candles in, setting other candles up. And then he reached down with his finger, and he snuffed out that candle. And he said, "There's only one great, and that's God. There's only one who's great, and that's God. This man is not great. Powerful men are not great. Scientists are not great. Only God. Only God is great." Here's another thing. As God, Jesus can do all things, and this is so important to us. To the one who's mortal, Jesus says in John 8:58, "I am eternal. I'll give you eternal life." To the one who's seeking, Jesus says in John 4:6, "I am the truth. You can believe me. I'm telling you the truth." To the one who's lost, Jesus says in John 14:6, "I am the way. You can follow me." To the one who's confused, Jesus says in John 9:5, "I am the light. You can listen to me. I'll not misguide you." To the one who's on the outside, Jesus says in John 10:7, "I am the door. Enter life through me." To the one who is alone, Jesus says in John 15:1, "I am the vine. I give you life. Plug into me. Plug into my life. I'll give you life. I am the vine. You no longer need to be alone." To the one who's weak, Jesus says in John 6:35, "I am the bread. Partake of me." To the one who's afraid, Jesus says in John 10:11, "I am the good shepherd. I will always, always protect you." To the one who's dying, Jesus says in John 11:25, "I am the resurrection. Follow me and you'll never, ever die." For the one who's willing, Jesus says in John 13:13, "I am the Lord and Master. You can follow me. You can follow me." Still thinking about Jesus as the mighty God. With Jesus, we can do all things. Isn't that what Paul says in Philippians 4:13? "I am able to do all things through him who strengthens me." What a mighty God we have in Jesus. A third name, Jesus is the everlasting Father. Jesus brought with him everything my soul longs for. He brought with him everything your soul longs for. If you're confused and need direction, he's your wonderful counselor. If you're weak and need strength, he's your mighty God. But if you've been orphaned and abandoned by this world, if you're out of spiritual resources and long for a life of abundance, if you long for a life of security, you long for a life of unconditional love that's warm and deep and all-encompassing, if you long for this to last right through death and into eternity, then Jesus is your everlasting Father. Lee Strobel tells a story of a young Korean woman who had an affair with an American GI and got pregnant. When the war was over, the GI came back to America and she never saw him again. She gave birth to a little girl who had Asian features but blonde curly hair, characteristics that were shunned by all in Korea. The girl was shunned, the girl was persecuted, consequently the mother was shunned, the mother was persecuted, so mother and daughter both were starving to death. There was nothing the mother could do about it. So by the time the girl was 7, the mother abandoned the girl on the streets of Seoul, Korea. For 2 years, the girl scrambled for food out of trash cans and dumpsters, trying her best to survive. She was persecuted by the other children on the street. They gave her the worst name in the Korean language, Tuki, which means alien devil. She began to think of herself as an alien devil. She began to see herself as that low person. After a couple years on the street, by the time she was 9 years old, she found her way into an orphanage. One day, word came that an American couple was coming to adopt a little boy. So she did all she could to clean up these little boys. She gave them baths. She washed their hair. She cleaned them up, put on their best clothes. She was excited, and all the orphanage was excited because one little boy, one baby boy, was going to be adopted and having a family. What a great thing that was. That girl's name is Elizabeth Kim. In her book, 10,000 Sorrows, she writes this: "It was like Goliath had come back to life. I saw the man with his huge hands lift up each boy and every baby. I knew he loved every one of them as if they were his own. I saw tears running down his face. And I knew if he could, he would have taken the whole lot home with him. He saw me out of the corner of his eye. And let me tell you, I was 9 years old, but didn't weigh even 30 pounds. I was a scrawny thing. I had worms in my body. I had lice in my hair. I had boils all over my body. I was full of scars. I was not a pretty sight. But the man came over to me and began rattling away something in English. And I looked up at him. Then he took his huge, warm hand and placed it along the side of my face. In time, I learned what he was saying. He was saying, 'I want this child. This is the child for me.'" You know, if you choose to follow Christ, the world's not going to be nice to you. The world's going to persecute you. The world's going to call you names. The world's going to call you a hate monger, even though you're not. The world's going to shun you. You're not going to be received by the world. That's not the way Jesus is going to treat you. God the Father places his hand alongside your face and says, "I want this child. This is the child for me." Romans chapter 8, verse 14. "All those led by God's Spirit are God's sons. For you did not receive a spirit of slavery to fall back into fear. You received a spirit of adoption, by whom we cry out, 'Abba, Father.' The Spirit himself testifies together with our spirit that we are God's children." What a great thing. And we'll be so eternally. He's our eternal Father. And with just the few moments we have left, let's look at this last one. Jesus is the Prince of Peace. Some names stick, others don't. Prince of Peace stuck. That name stuck. We all know that a prince is the son of a king. But in the Bible, prince also describes someone who's a leader. Jesus is the leader of peace. Jesus is the trailblazer of peace. Jesus is the one who knows peace, who understands peace. Jesus is the one who takes the lead and introduces us to peace. Peace is Jesus' thing. It's always been his thing. Peace can only be found through Jesus, in fact. He's the one who provided a way. He's shown us how true inner serenity comes as we make peace with God. Jesus is the Prince of Peace because he leads us into peace with God. I think maybe this name stuck because in our heart of hearts, deep in our souls, this is what we need more than anything else. In the turmoil and the turbulence of this world, in the unrestfulness of this world, in the uncertainty of this world, the darkness of this world, in the despair of this world void of real hope, what we really want more than anything else is just peace. We can handle almost anything else if we have peace. If our heart is at rest, if our heart is quieted, if we have this solid, strong foundation upon which we can rest and have peace in the midst of this life, we can handle almost anything else. Jesus is the Prince of that. Jesus is the source of that. So, tell me. You have it? Do you have peace? In your heart of hearts, in your soul, as you're honest with yourself here this morning, in the midst of all that life is throwing at you today, you have peace? You can have. Jesus is the Prince. Receive it today. Take it today. Claim it today. Pray with me.